Good afternoon, Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from deep inside the heart of the future Liberty State. Sponsored once again by On Fire Ministries and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong, about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ, about not ending in prayer, but also moving to action. It's about the gospel of the kingdom. Ephesians 2. Verse 19 through 22. So then you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and are of God's household, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Christ Jesus himself being the cornerstone, in whom the whole building being fitted together is growing into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built together into a dwelling or a habitation of God in the Spirit. I don't know how many of you actually pray and fast out there right now, but it might be a good idea to start reclaiming that old Christian virtue of taking some time and praying and fasting and seeking the Lord for what you need to be doing in this time. This is a time where we have to press into the Lord, focus solely on Him, just so that we do not get sidetracked by all the distractions, cares, and worries of this life. And especially with everything that's going on today. Now, I don't have time to get into all of it, but I am going to go in depth today on the Ukraine issue. I'm going to share some things you probably have not heard. I'm going to share some things, and some of this is coming in literally as I'm sitting here on the ground, from witnesses, eyewitnesses on the ground about what actually is happening. There is a lot of disinformation on both sides of the coin here, and it's actually become kind of frustrating. What's the truth? Who's telling the truth? So I want to help wade through that today and also give some practical and prudential reasons why we should come down on a specific side. All right. We do this show in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, and the reason that I want to bring that up right now is because a lot of times the story is indeed behind the story. The issue is not the issue. So I want to highlight that on a couple things that are happening right now and why not just the Canadian government and the alleged Castro love child is upset with all the truckers up there, but also, why the globalists are upset and why they're so scared that this might happen here in America. Right now, as Christians, we have to be both warring in the spirit and prepared physically. And so again, I'm going to reiterate to everybody out there, be prepared. Make sure you have food. And I'm talking 1 to 2 years, not just 30 days. 1 to 2 years worth of food. Matt, I can't afford that. Actually, you can start by buying things now that you will use and work toward it. But there are many options locally to do that. Buy food, store it up for your friends and your family, and make sure you also have medical supplies, the ability to communicate and listen, actually, on single sideband radio. Make sure you've got enough sundry items. And I'm not just talking about toilet paper, okay? I'm not. I'm talking about also key sundry items for the ladies in your life and also key sundry items like, oh, I don't know, toothpaste and toothbrushes. Make sure you've got enough because this weirdness that's happening, I'm going to explain it in the context of history, and I hope that that will clear it up. All right. That brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing. On the international front, coming to us from Debka File, Travis is going to bring this up right now, and yes, a very impressive picture with all the tanks on it. But Russia's Ukraine invasion is ready to go. Military has 1 month supply. Kiev plans on 3 million evacuees. Russian army has completed its deployment along Ukraine's land and sea borders. The 130,000 to 150,000 troops in place have received supplies for a month with medical support, as we have been reporting, for potential invasion casualties, including field hospitals and plasma. Here's what you are not hearing. Last night, our intelligence sources very clearly laid out that just even according to open source databases, that the Russian Air Force was flying what's called a wagon wheel formation over Western Russia. And when they do that, they're trying to entice enemy aircraft to come in. And also it's partly for reconnaissance. So that's happening. The wagon wheel formation of the Air Force over the Donetsk region, which is in Ukraine proper, okay, but where Russian separatists have, aka Russian special forces, have gone in back in 2014. In addition to that, Debka File is reporting that the CIA had intercepted essentially orders to Russian generals to be ready to go by the 16th. That's where Biden came up with this whole thing, that they were going to invade on the 16th. Now, if anybody telegraphs a date, it usually isn't going to happen on that date, okay, just so we're clear, and very likely not until after the Olympics. But I'm seeing a ton of things out there right now that are missing history. Oh, Biden's just, you know, the pretender's just making it up. And this, look, it, I am not one to defend the pretender, as all of you know, but there are some things that he's saying right now that obviously he's being told to say that are accurate. There is a buildup on the border, and I'm going to get to that here in a second. Back to Debka File, the Russian ambassador to Sweden, Viktor Tatarintsev, said on Sunday, excuse my language, but we don't give a blank about all of their sanctions. There's another part of this, too, that is being missed. The Russians have very clearly said their plan is to see NATO destroyed or dissolved. Putin has had this plan for a decade. This isn't like NATO provoked it all of a sudden right now. Putin is operating according to his plan. He is using fourth generation warfare to do that. And in fact, last night, I have a translation of President Zelensky's address to Ukraine. And in that address, I want to read part of this to you. It says this, that they're strong. They believe they're strong and stronger than they were 8 years ago. And what he's referring to is the original Russian invasion that happened back in 2014 during those Olympics. But here's what he says. Militarily, they're growing the contingents near our borders. He's referring to Russia. So there's a lot of people who said Zelensky doesn't believe it, but this is what he addressed the nation with last night. Militarily, they're growing the contingents near our borders. Diplomatically, they're trying to strip our right to determine our own international political discourse or course. Energetically, and they're talking about the energy sector there. It's a little bit of a bad translation there. But energetically, they're limiting the import of gas, electricity, and coal. Informationally, they're trying to seed panic among us, citizens of Ukraine, among the investors through mass media. So what Zelensky recognized in his address is that there's fourth generation warfare against his country. And this is also happening against the United States. He clearly says that Ukraine doesn't want to steal what belongs to someone else, but we're not going to give up what's ours. And then at the end of the address, he was specifically addressing some of the oligarchs and very, very good. Your power isn't in your money, your planes, but in your civil position, which you can show return to your people, to your country. So he's addressing some oligarchs that have fled the country. And then at the end, I really love this. Wow. We believe in our own strength and continue building our destiny together because we're united by love. Our love of Ukraine, the one and only, and love conquers all. Yes, you might think that there's dark all around you, but tomorrow the sun will rise again over our peaceful sky. Be calm. We are strong. We are together, a great nation of a great country. This is very interesting as well. Here's what he said to his people last night. We never knew how to surrender, and we aren't going to learn how. What a message that is for us in America. We never knew how to surrender, and we aren't going to learn how. Amen. And I hope the truckers hear that message up there in Canada right now, and the truckers that are preparing to go across America. Now, I got a report just before the show, and I haven't been able to confirm it yet. I'm trying to confirm it as we're on the show right now. Ukraine has been hit with a cyber attack, and this is coming from people on the ground in Ukraine. In addition to that, people on the ground in Ukraine are reporting directly that they have their suitcases packed, that they are looking at fleeing any sort of war that comes in, and this is from the eastern part of Ukraine, any sort of war that comes into that. And in addition to that, yesterday, S2 Underground came out with a very, very good piece of battle tracking, and they've been battle tracking well all the way along. I want to pause before I get to that, though, and then I'll explain where you can go find this information yourself and view it and keep up with it yourself. Okay. Russia withdraws some units from Ukraine. This coming to us again from Debka file. And here's the caveat to this. Now, a lot of people have seized on this. Oh, you see, nothing's really happening, except it says de-escalation not confirmed. And I want to get to why they say this. The defense ministry in Moscow said Tuesday that Russia has started returning southern and western military units from the Ukrainian border to their bases. But the drills involving nearly all districts in the Russian Navy continue. And they're due to end, these other drills, 20 February. But here's the issue. When we see a withdrawal, we will believe in a de-escalation, Ukraine's foreign minister said. What the Russians have been doing, and I'm countering a lot of people I respect right now, because the facts on the ground say something different than what they're saying. The Russians have not withdrawn anybody really from the front. They've actually moved them forward toward Ukraine. And again, S2 Underground has done a great job battle tracking this. They've moved forward to what we call in the military a forward line of departure. This is ahead of what is called a forward staging base. And the forward line of departure is essentially where you set up tanks, you set up infantry, you set up mechanized infantry on that forward line of departure. And that is the last place you go before you start a war. And so S2 Underground has been tracking this, and they have satellite photos in here that are extremely well organized and well done. If you've never heard of S2 Underground, I would strongly urge you go there. You can find their channel on Patreon. And they have an update on their slides for today, and I have not had a chance to get to those slides today, but I want to talk about what they released yesterday evening. Here is what we know is fact. The Russian Air Force is flying a wagon wheel formation over Donetsk. That's a provocative formation, something that you don't see normally. In addition, this is the largest military deployment of the Russians since World War II, and is either the largest PSYOP and deception campaign, or they're actually going to invade. Either way, if it's not taken seriously, the cost could be devastating. So you have to take it seriously. And you can't just, oh, this is just disaster. Putin would never do this. He has enough battalion tactical groups, or BTGs, to actually attack all of Europe. And if you add all these troops together, This is more than General Patton had with the Third Army going across Europe. That's what I don't get with these guys that are saying, oh, don't pay attention, don't worry about it. Just from a truly analytical, objective case, we can see from the S2 underground slides that there are, in the Bavgorka camp in Belarus, you have vehicles hidden in the tree line, vehicles that relocate to hidden places in the tree line. You can see this also in daylight and in nighttime or thermal imaging. You can see this also on the Northwestern front, that they're coordinating and consolidating toward forward lines only a few kilometers away from the Ukrainian border. And you can see them doing this in the northwest, so Kyiv. You could see them also doing this on the western front, which is near Mariupol, and their Navy landing craft and amphibious assault capability appears to be massing in the Black Sea, which could mean an implication for Odessa, which is also on the Black Sea. So we're not even talking Crimea or Mariupol anymore. And then also, in the next part of the southern front down there, you have all of the forces in Crimea that could surge north toward the Dnieper River. And again, Mariupol seems to be right dead center of a lot of this. And so does Zaporozhye. So on the eastern front, you can see how they're increasingly getting close and increasingly creating provocations on the eastern front right near the Ukrainian border in the disputed regions. And there's been at least half a dozen or more direct conflicts. So I'm talking bullets to bullets and artillery that have happened in that area here in the very recent past. When you look at the other area, which is up near Kharkiv, Ukraine, in the eastern part of Ukraine, so the northeastern part of Ukraine, again, one of the largest cities in Ukraine, Kharkiv, within, again, kilometers of the border, another massing near that city as well. It very clearly looks like military positioning for an invasion of Ukraine. Now, whether Putin wants to gamble that or not, I don't know. But as this has developed, you have this move by Putin to then say, oh, yeah, we still want to talk a little bit more. Well, sure, if you want to wait till after the Olympics. So next week is going to be a key week to see what the Russians actually do. I don't think anything's going to happen this week. And I also saw some just really flawed analysis about the temperatures and the ground in Kharkiv, Ukraine, and also in Mariupol and Donetsk. The ground there is frozen. The temperature in Fahrenheit is below freezing during the evening and rises to just above freezing during the day. The ground there is frozen. It's perfect for tanks to move right now. They don't have to wait. It's ready right now. It has been actually since December. So there's people out there that are saying things like, oh, the ground isn't frozen enough yet. I don't know what they're talking about, but the people on the ground and the objective temperature readings are showing the ground is exactly ready for an invasion of Ukraine. In addition to that, if this, in fact, cyber attack has occurred, this would be yet another cyber attack among many in the last couple of months against Ukraine, trying to destabilize the currency and trying to instill fear and panic among people as part of the psychological and information warfare. So, what should the United States do? This is what is so interesting to me. Russia has already declared war on the United States. They're already fighting fourth-generation warfare against the United States, and so is China. Why are we not taking this seriously? The maps don't lie. And yes, they can move these forces very quickly, but the maps do not lie. And so we either have to take what these people say with their mouths seriously, what they plan, and history, the fact that this has not happened since World War II, or we can do so at our peril. We can say, look, there's a reason they have that many troops massed on their western border. They've moved troops out of the middle and the eastern part of Russia to the border, just like they did in World War II. We can understand that Putin is a former KGB agent, that he said that the fall of Russia was one of the worst travesties of the last century, that he wants to reinstitute the neo-Soviet state, that he wants to use the Orthodox Church as the religious backbone to do this, and the ideological backbone to do this, and take him at his word, or make up a lot of things, wishing away the wolf at the door. Now, for those of us that have actually been to war, none of us wants to go to war and see war happen. But I also can objectively look at this and understand that what is being put out all in the media right now and from both sides simply is not accurate from what is being reported on the ground. My sense is here that if we continue to ignore this, if we continue to wish the wolf away from the door, the wolf is going to be coming in, and we're going to be reacting instead of taking the fight to our enemies. Which brings us now to Reuters, which I just got this confirmed, 2:49 Pacific time. So this was happening just before the show. Ukraine Defense Ministry website, banks knocked offline. The online networks of Ukraine's defense ministry and two banks were overwhelmed on Tuesday in Ukraine's information security center, pointing the finger at neighboring Russia. So yes, it does look like a cyber attack has indeed occurred, and a cyber attack possibly toward the United States as this unfolds. In addition to that, coming to us from And Magazine, Biden stumbles toward war, Russians move on U.S. submarine. For weeks now, the Biden administration has been compromised in looking at political annihilation in the coming midterm elections. That's an understatement. The Russian military claimed Saturday its Navy chased an American Virginia-class submarine out of Russian territorial waters in the Kuril Islands after the American vessel refused an order to surface. So now we're having naval incidents happening as well between the United States and Russia. This isn't having to do with Ukraine. This is why what I'm about to say is important. Moving to Canada, coming to us from the Epoch Times, Trudeau declares state of emergency over protests against COVID-19 mandates. Four premiers disagree with him invoking the act. It's a very, very rarely used act, and not ever against peaceful protesters. Here's the thing. COVID is about to end here in March, April. We've been saying this on the show for a while, and they're going to replace this with some type of a war worldwide to justify further controls and implementations. What they're doing right now is taking a Hegelian step backward. This is what Putin's doing right now, too, by the way. A step backward. Okay, wait. And then they move forward again. Take a step backward. Then they move forward again, two steps. So we're seeing this happen with the COVID-19 mandates. They're going to go away. It doesn't mean we don't keep the pressure up, which we need to do. But could you imagine if the truckers did this and the farmers did this here in Washington State, took their trucks and their farm implements to Olympia, Washington, and did the same thing? Or maybe even to the county governments here. Could you imagine this? And what's interesting is the truckers have now won the strategic level of warfare. They've now won the moral level of warfare because a new poll, overwhelming majority of Canadians want all COVID restrictions dropped. So Canada, in a poll, 2/3 of Canadians say it's time to drop COVID restrictions and people just need to learn to live with the virus. So the truckers, what they did was galvanize the moral support, the moral level of the war. They've won that. And now Trudeau is reacting in typical fashion like a dictator. And some argue a dictator like his father, Fidel Castro. That is all allegation. I do not want to say that with any definitive certainty, but that rumor is out there and it's going all over the internet right now. That said, here in America, truckers are set to protest COVID-19 mandates and they're set to hit the roads here in the coming weeks. Now, this is what they fear because the majority of support financially was coming from the United States to Canada to help our brothers and sisters out next door. And this MAGA convoy, so named after President Trump's slogan, they are making several stops. And as I understand it, may even be coming, and that's on the East Coast, may even come through Spokane. So this coming to us from WorldNet Daily, and you can check it out there. On top of that, yesterday, from the Gateway Pundit, Kash Patel weighs in on the Durham grand jury. And I want to read this. He is going to deliver. He's talking about Durham. This guy is unraveling the biggest criminal conspiracy against a sitting president in United States history. They're continuing to reveal not only the collusion, but the intentional attempt and utilization of the U.S. intelligence community to gain access to White House servers, among other operatives. And this is incredible. I mean, we're going to see how the facts come out of this, but just reading, as I just did to you, what he's saying, we need to pay attention to that as well. I'm going to shift over next to the last two items we've got here. Coming to us from Technocracy News, an app tracks users' eyes to make sure they watch advertisements. MoviePass. The service is returning as an app that will track users' eyes when they watch adverts so that we give our undivided attention to the advertisements. I mean, is this getting creepy to anybody? Because it's getting creepy to me. And last but not least, coming back home to old Washington State, who knows, maybe this will have truckers and farmers and those that love this country going to Olympia, Washington, like they did to the Capitol in Canada. Senate Bill 5078, I got a text on this yesterday, would take away most firearms from lawful gun owners and make standard firearms illegal. That's what it said in the text. Then coming to us from WashingtonGunLaw.com, it is a measure that would ban the manufacture, possession, sale, transfer of magazines that are capable of holding more than 10 rounds of ammunition. This includes conversion kits. So this would render a lot of firearms that are already manufactured to do this potentially on the wrong side of the law. Prohibited magazines would have to be transported, unloaded, and locked separately from firearms and stored at a home lock, making them unavailable for self-defense. Any violation of this matter would be a gross misdemeanor punishable by a maximum of 364 days in jail or a fine of $5,000. Also, ban Senate Bill 5038, a ban on open carry at demonstrations at state capitol. In other words, you can't do what is already lawful under Washington state law. Folks, this is just one example. I would advise everybody read Alexander Solzhenitsyn's The Gulag Archipelago. Just read the first chapter. Pages, I think it's 15 and 16, where he says, at what point should we resist? And he came up with the answer, when they come to take away your neighbor's stuff. I would add, in America, when they come to take the guns, when they try to come to take your liberties, yes, we should be standing up like the truckers in Canada for all of those who cannot stand up for themselves right now, but who agree that liberty is worth fighting for. And the truckers did this peacefully. I love it. The horns were the things that made people get so upset. And yet the whole world is watching, and it has brought the globalist plan to a standstill right now. And now it's coming to America, where I think everybody here should be doing their part. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for us. And make sure you go to Gab, MeWe, Getter, at Matt Shea. Follow me. Share this with your friends and family. We're also on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, and Amazon. And if you absolutely have to, go to Patriot Radio US on Facebook. Share that with your friends and family. All right. It's my very distinct honor once again to introduce General Paul Vallely, retired from Stand Up America U.S. Foundation. And also want to just mention, he's been talking about a lot of these issues years in advance, and it's great to have him back on the show. General Vallely, thanks for joining us again on Patriot Radio.
I'm getting voicemail.
All right. So we are going to continue on this analysis of Ukraine right now. And I'm going to quickly pull this back up. And Travis, if we can go back to the S2 underground, I'm going to pull this back up here right now. So I want to go back to this analysis from a tactical, strategic, and geostrategic perspective. And then we're going to talk about the truckers again, because I think the truckers are breathing courage and freedom back into the movement here in America. But tow truck owners, where do you stand on this? Because it's tow truck owners that are going against the truckers up there. So we need to talk to our tow truck owners here in America and ask them this question. Where will you stand when the truckers stand up? Where will you stand when the American people stand up? Why don't we instead tow away tyranny? Hey, Travis, I just coined that. We need to tow away tyranny. That's what the tow truck drivers need to do. All right. So if we can go to the slide. Can we go to the slide to the... That was one of my sources right there. If we can go to the slide on the European theater update and take a look at this very quickly. All right. Right now, just a couple of key points that haven't been published in the news. So we're on the European theater update. KLM Airlines suspends flights to Ukraine. I did a look here yesterday on the air traffic over Ukraine, and it was almost completely bare. So we're looking at slide number two. In addition to that, Poland and the United States Embassy are expecting refugees coming into Poland, or at least they're planning on it. Yes, the U.S. Embassy also closed in Kiev and moved to Lviv. Now, if you don't know Ukrainian geography, Lviv is in the west near the border with Poland. So, taking a look at this real quick. In addition to that, you have civilians, and we have this confirmed by eyewitnesses on the ground, civilians in Ukraine who are beginning to prepare self-defense units, taking self-defense classes, organizing at the very local level. If you're unfamiliar with Ukrainian history, I want to go through that very quickly. There's a book out there called Target Patton, P-A-T-T-O-N, Target Patton, and it details some of this history that I'm going to tell you about. A lot of this was confirmed through some very important primary sources. The first is the Venona transcripts, which were the broken Soviet cables during and then after World War II. These cables is exactly what Senator McCarthy had access to when he was making the allegations he was about the communists that had infiltrated not only the United States government, but also Hollywood and beyond. Number two, you had later the Matryoshkin archives, the largest cache of archives brought out of the former Soviet Union. It was brought out by an archivist in the Soviet Union. And as these were brought out, they clearly delineated who, in fact, was a Soviet agent and who was not. So they corroborated these kind of these things, and they corroborated some of the things that history had question marks about. Like, for example, was George Patton targeted himself by the Russians? And the answer to that was yes, but there was very likely some sources inside the United States government who allowed it to happen because they were also Soviet agents. Now, under the Roosevelt administration, 329 confirmed Soviet agents. I want you to hear that number again. Over 300 confirmed Soviet agents in the Roosevelt administration. That is what gave birth to the deep state. Now, where does Ukraine come into this? Well, at the end of World War II, the Ukrainians, Stepan Bandera, Stepan Smolstocky, and several others came together and they formed what was known as the Promethean League with other Eastern European countries to fight against Stalin because they knew that the West was going to win the war. And as this happened and they fought against Stalin, they had intelligence agents who had infiltrated Stalin's NKVD, which was the precursor to the KGB. So they had infiltrated Stalin's intelligence apparatus. As a result, they were able to warn of potential attacks, one of those specifically being the attempted assassination of George Patton, because there were a couple incidents that happened before that. They warned about this, but up the chain, as this went up the chain, it ran into one of these confirmed Soviet agents inside the U.S. government who allowed these things to happen. Ukraine also said, you have a serious deep state problem, and this is at the end of World War II. So today, you have the Ukrainians once again saying, you guys have a deep state problem, and you have infiltration of communists into your government, again, and to other key parts of society. Just getting in some information here. Cool. Love it. We'll get that out here in a second. And as a result, 80 years later after World War II, the Ukrainians once again are telling us, watch out. The Russians are at it again. And of course, the Russians want to invade Ukraine for a whole host of reasons. And I keep hearing people out there saying, oh, they'll never do that. They wouldn't want to do that. Again, not understanding history. Russia has always attempted to invade Ukraine in modern times. And I want to get some specific numbers out here to you to give you an understanding of what is so important about Ukraine, what is so important about Poland. So first, I'm going to start with geography. Traditionally, there are three ways into Russia that they worry about. And there's a fourth way that they don't worry about as much. But Putin understands he's a little bit under a barrel out there in the east, and I'll explain that here in a second. So the first way into Russia is from the south through what we know as Kazakhstan. Well, Kazakhstan now has Russian troops deployed to it, so that they feel is taken care of. The other main avenue is through the country of Georgia and Abkhazia and South Ossetia, and also you have the Chechen area down there as well. And that very narrow valley and actually several valleys to come up into Russia has traditionally been an avenue of attack against the Russians. So they want to close that down. Well, they did that a couple of years ago when they invaded Georgia, and also when they just arrested this last year the leader of the freedom movement in Georgia, Saakashvili. So now Georgia is locked up for the Russians. So then geographically, the only other way into Russia is through Ukraine and Poland. And from my perspective, when you look at this, Russia only has one more place to really shore up. Well, what about the East, Matt? What about... Well, the Chinese have a bunch of workers that have moved into Siberia. They've moved into Siberia. And they're working in the forests in Siberia. So that overwhelming majority of Chinese that are in the East now, Putin doesn't want to upset the Chinese. He's got to do what's best for Russia. So, okay, we'll ink some oil deals with you. I'll secure my Eastern Front. Now, Stalin did the same thing where he had spies in the Japanese court during World War II. He knew the Eastern Front was not going to be attacked. So he moved everything to the West. And we're seeing something similar happen right now as Putin is moving forces from the East and from the central part, the Baikal region of Russia, to the West. So what makes Poland and Ukraine so strategically important? Well, Putin has now seized the Crimea, so he's got ports on the Black Sea, which he's always wanted. He feels that that is strategically important to Russia. And again, this has nothing to do with NATO provocation. This just has to do with Russian history, okay? Period. The other part of this is, underneath Ukraine is the 23rd largest deposit of natural gas in the world, and under Poland, the 54th largest in the world. Putin controls Europe and leverages Europe by the gas that comes in. He's been slowly turning the gas off here over the last few months, and he wants to leverage especially Germany in regards to the gas. So what is happening is that if the United States helps Poland develop natural gas and Ukraine develop natural gas, and in the interim ups the exports from the United States to Europe of natural gas, which is what Trump was doing, Russia loses leverage. Russia loses leverage. So Putin sees that as a strategic issue, as well as having a buffer to protect the Russian heartland from this Eastern avenue of approach and the revival of this neo-Soviet empire. A lot of the people that speak and influence him, again, have this idea that Russia is tied to the Orthodox Church. Historically, it is, but also it's tied to it because the KGB infiltrated virtually all of the Orthodox leadership. And the ones that you see today are the progeny of those who were KGB agents to a large extent. And I know that might upset some people, but that's just historic fact. And you can read about that in General Mihai Pachipa's book, Disinformation. He's the highest ranking KGB defector to the United States. So you have the gas issue, you have the geography issue, you have the neo-Soviet state issue and the plans there to unite this greater Russian empire. You have the issue of him trying to mollify China. And you also have the issue that as a KGB guy, he is always going to wage fourth generation warfare and not, to the extent possible, come out with kinetic warfare. In other words, bullets and tanks and guns. What he's going to do is he's going to use diplomacy to stall until he's ready to act in the manner that he wants to. And he's going to use fourth generation warfare, trade, financial disruption. And as the Ukrainian president last night said about the currency, financial disruption and destabilization of the hryvnia in Ukraine, their currency. He's going to use the attempt to isolate through diplomacy and through trade Ukraine. He's going to try to get all the Western powers to say, it's really not that big a deal if I take Ukraine. You really don't need to worry about that. And I've got to tell you something. That is exactly what Hitler expected, was nobody to react when he annexed the Sudetenland and Czechoslovakia, and then eventually Austria. And he had the Austrians do a vote, by the way, to say, oh, yes, of course, we want to go along with this, just like Putin did in Crimea, Donetsk, and Luhansk. So if we don't see the history of this and the tactics and techniques that Putin is using, the geostrategic reasons he's doing what he's doing, we're very likely to wish the wolf away from the door. And then people say, well, Matt, it's not our fight. Some really good people have said this, Matt, it's not our fight. And here's my point. I'm not talking about that fight. I'm talking about the fact that right now, Russia has already declared war against us and is already perpetrating fourth generation warfare against us through cyber attacks, through trade issues. And that's why that Russian ambassador to Sweden is going to say something like, we don't give a blank about all your sanctions. So as this continues to unfold, I'm going to give you what I'm getting in and the analysis. If we go back to that Reuters article, Travis, on the cyber attack. So we have it confirmed now from on the ground that cyber attack was in fact limited just to those government agencies. The rest of the internet for citizens was left intact. We have that from eyewitnesses on the ground in Ukraine. So this is like World War II, the end of it anyway, is playing all over again. We have to pick a side. And some people say, well, no, you don't. Yeah, actually, we do. We pick the side of freedom and liberty for America. And freedom and liberty for America means that if we have somebody that has declared war against us in trade, in cyber, in information, in all of these spaces, why are we not fighting back in the fourth generation warfare sphere? Putin calls it hybrid war, but why? Because he doesn't want to use an American coined term, because it was an American that came up with this as analysis is concerned. Why are we not fighting back in the fourth generation warfare sphere? Instead, Biden looks weak. The pretender looks weak. Trump was fighting back here. Putin respected him. He respected him. And you notice Putin did something in 2014. Trump's elected in 2016. Everything's fine. Soon as Trump is out of office and the pretender is there, then he starts doing stuff again. And this is only part of the whole view. We also have China waiting in the wings for the Olympics to be over here next week. And Iran and Israel. The deployment of new and advanced weapon systems in those countries too is what's really showing collusion between the Chinese and the Iranians, the Chinese and the Russians. And I want to talk about a strategy they had way, way back in the day. This is back in the 1983 timeframe. And there was a U.S. congressman who actually had been briefed on this and was headed to a further briefing on this when his plane was shot down. It was Larry McDonald. But the scheme was to create a war in the West, in part of Europe, and then a war in the East on the Korean Peninsula or Taiwan. And because it was a two-front war, the West could not react to both, and they would hold some of that ground. Either they would give up Europe and keep in the East, or they would give up part of the East, keep part of Europe, whatever it ended up being, whatever permutation was irrelevant. It was essentially this Hegelian dialectic. They took two steps forward and then said, oh, no, we're going to take a step backward. And that's how the Soviets, communists, the Chinese communists operate. They constantly will make you have a Hobson's choice, when in fact the real answer is you get none of it. We're going to fight communism wherever it rears its ugly head. We have to understand this mindset of communists. They follow a very clear plan every single time. They very rarely veer off of it. They very rarely compromise on it. They follow this plan. Two steps forward, one step back. They have a plan that is generational. They don't just have a plan for the next 5 years. And that is how Vladimir Putin sees this. Do we see it the same way as our adversaries do? Do we understand our adversaries? And that brings me now to the trucker protest again. Years and years ago, a bunch of farmers came to Olympia and parked their tractors in Olympia. And it had a profound effect on Olympia. And when the government doesn't listen, we have a right under the First Amendment that is protected under the First Amendment. Because this is a God-given, unalienable right. No one can take it away. We have a right to petition for a redress of grievances. We have a right to peaceably assemble. And the Founding Fathers did these kind of things. They assembled outside of the governor's mansion. They assembled in a way that some might say was obnoxious, but it was peaceful. They burned effigies. They shouted. And I mean, you want to talk about honking. They shouted. They did all these kind of things. And the reason was because government was becoming tyrannical. If government bureaucrats could not persuade people and tried to implement things that were very clearly against our natural God-given unalienable rights, then yes, they could stand up against it. But I'm going to give you something tonight that I never have heard it in any class I've ever been in by the best constitutional scholars, best patriot scholar. I've never heard anybody talk about this. There is something in Jewish tradition that goes all the way back to what are called the Noahide laws, all the way back to Noah, okay? So this is before Moses. Some claim that Samuel compiled these things, and it's called the Ancient Law of Kings. And 3.9 in the Ancient Law of Kings says that if the king tells you to do something against God's commandments, that you have the right not to obey the king, and you cannot be held liable for doing that. This is the first true instance of this right of what I would call peaceful obedience of God's law instead of man's law. I've heard this civil disobedience. No, we want civil obedience, obedience to the Constitution, obedience of God's law. And it's very clear that this attempt to steal property, force businesses to close, force people to wear things against their will, trying to shut down houses of worship, trying to mandate people put something into their body that is contrary to their mode of worship. And I want to stop there for a second. Article 26 of the Washington State Constitution says very clearly that we cannot be molested in our person or property on account of our mode of worship. The Supreme Court has very clearly said that what you put into your body is a mode of worship. And so forcing people to go against their mode of worship, to put something into their body against their mode of worship, is not only unconstitutional, it is immoral. It goes against God's law, God's commandments. This is what the truckers are now highlighting, that the mandates themselves all must end, because you cannot have an emergency forever. Again, the United States Supreme Court has very clearly said that you can't have emergencies into perpetuity, because that would eviscerate everything else in the Constitution. So today, as we see the truckers in Canada and what they're doing to them, they're thinking here in the United States under the Pretenders administration what they're going to do to the truckers here. And it's incumbent upon all of us to come behind them, support them, and support everyone who's fighting for freedom and liberty and doing these peaceful protests to end this tyranny in this country. And if that ends up with a trucker farmer protest in Olympia, fantastic. If that ends up with trucker farmer protests at every single county courthouse in this state until county commissioners actually do what they're supposed to do and stand in between a tyrannical government and the people, fantastic. But the time right now is not to sit on the sidelines. The time is to step up for this generation and for our posterity so that when they ask us, what did we do in this time, we can say, we stood for freedom and liberty. Now, a couple of events coming up I want to highlight here at the end of the show. On the 19th, there is going to be an event. You can message me for more information. That is going to be training citizens on effective activism. Similarly, on the 26th of February, there is also going to be an event doing the same thing and talking about solutions. Also coming up here in March and in April, so I believe April 2nd, there is going to be another event and rally as the spring and the weather unfolds here, to unify everybody and make sure these mandates all end. So be ready. Be listening, and more information is going to be coming out on social media and on this show on how you can be involved and be effective in fighting for freedom and liberty and spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ and expanding the kingdom. Because that's what it's all about. Going into the darkest places and preaching the gospel and making disciples. Part of making disciples is worldview. Amen, amen, amen. Well, I want to thank you all for joining me on Patriot Radio today. I'm sorry we couldn't get General Valley on. That's something we'll try to do here for next week. May God bless all of you. And may he make this generation the greatest one, the one that was moved to action. Keep up the fight.